Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization's summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news.
What you are about to hear are some highlights
from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
Hi and welcome to the show. You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. It's the 12th of May and today we've got a selection of stories from the international news wires and some local highlights closer to home.
The trial began today in Israel of Sergeant Idia Wahid Taisir, who is facing six charges in connection with the killing of Tom Herndel. Tom Herndel, the 21-year-old British student photojournalist, was fatally shot in the head as he was shepherding children to safety in Rafah, Gaza, last spring. After spending 9 months in a coma, he died on the 13th of January this year. Sergeant Idia Wahid Taisir will be tried on six indictments: manslaughter, two counts of obstruction of justice, incitement to false testimony, improper conduct. He has entered a plea of not guilty to all charges at an earlier non-public hearing. The trial is taking place at a military court within the military base at Kastina Junction in Ashkelon, near Tel Aviv. And those called for examination today will include the operational commander of the soldier charged and two members of the military police responsible for carrying out the military police investigation. The mother of Tom Herndel, Jocelyn Herndel, has flown to Israel in order to attend the proceedings, which began at 9 a.m. on Monday morning. She will be accompanied by her Israeli lawyers, Avigdor Fieldman and Michael Sfard, a translator and a representative of the British consul. Just before she left the hotel on the way to the trial, Joyce Herndel said, "I accept that to have got this far is a significant achievement, indeed an historic one. There have been no trials of this magnitude relating to the killings in the occupied territories in the 3 years since the Intifada, which has seen over 3,000 innocent non-combatants killed and over 40,000 seriously injured in the region. I'm committed to getting to the truth about the circumstances surrounding the killing of my son. However, it is not sufficient to have come this far merely to attend the staging of a show trial. We have heard representations from the indicted soldier and other colleagues in his unit indicating that he has been hung out to dry and that he was just following orders. With the distinct absence of any kind of process for accountability for unlawful actions in the region, and with the staggering number of deaths of non-combatants, including three British nationals within the six-month period when Tom was shot, there are questions that need to be answered as to whether there are policy issues which led to Tom's death. Indeed, it is likely that there are others who share responsibility with the soldier currently in the dock." And for more information about the Tom Herndel trial, there's a website that you can visit, which is www.tomherndel.co.uk.
Brian Haugh, the Parliament Square peace protester who spent almost 3 years in a continuous anti-war protest vigil opposite the Houses of Parliament, was arrested and his extensive protest display removed in a sudden midnight police operation. At around 12:20 a.m. on Sunday, he was approached by a number of officers under the command of Inspector Forsyth of Charing Cross Police Station. Apparently, police were concerned about a suspect vehicle some distance away. They imposed a security cordon under the Terrorism Act, and the area was cleared of other members of the public before an incident took place, which in which Mr. Hall was arrested, and three supporters, including two women who were present at the time, were also threatened with arrest. Despite the supposed security threat, the police van did not leave the scene for some time, and Mr. Hall was last seen being thrown down on the floor of the police van, having been detained by four officers. After Mr. Hall's arrest, the suspect car was almost immediately identified to be posing no threat and the security cordon lifted. Subsequent to his arrest, and despite there being no longer any current security concerns, the remaining officers removed all of Mr. Hall's possessions and the protest placards from the site. They even commandeered a passing WH Smith news lorry to effect the removal. In March this year, the police told Mr. Hall and his solicitor that they were seeking to remove him from the Parliament Square, but they were not able to say which legislation they would employ. This followed a landmark High Court ruling which found in favour of Mr. Hall and his right to protest on the site. Mr. Hall has long voiced the concern of various attempts to remove him and continue to be politically motivated. Mr. Hall is represented by leading human rights practice Bindmans. His solicitor, Michael Schwartz, said, "Brian Hall is peacefully campaigning on perhaps the most significant issue of the day at a place which is supposed to be at the heart of democracy. It is difficult to think of a more compelling example of the deployment of the human rights to protest." Mr. Hall was released on Monday, and by Tuesday his placards were back on the square.
That was the start of a Dervish track by Coil. Ultimately,
A computer cannot go round to a house and help a child who is distressed or in danger. Only a human being can do that. Rather than wasting money on computer systems that are likely to make matters worse, all our available resources should be going towards solving the staffing crisis in social work. That was a quote from Action on Rights for Children in Education.
A couple of months ago, the government published the Children's Bill, which is supposed to protect children from abuse. But rather than putting more money into social services so that social workers are not overstretched and understaffed, it will create an Orwellian database of every single child in the country. That'll be about 11 million, which will do little to protect the children at risk from harm. Now call us paranoid, but after all of the ID card proposals recently, a vast database is just another step towards a total surveillance society where your every move is traced. And if you do not conform to a defined set of behaviours, then you'll be labelled subversive or antisocial. In typical neo-Labour control freak style, it seems that they don't trust parents to look after their own children and think that social workers are also incapable of protecting children. They think that rather than giving people with problems the support they need and funding decent social services, they can protect children with a massive unwieldy database. Now, currently information on any child that is at risk of suffering abuse or neglect should be shared between different agencies. This is designed to give social services a picture of children who suffer or who could suffer harm. But the new database will go a whole lot further. Every single child will have their details recorded. These intrusive virtual ID cards will allow any concern from a professional involved with children to be entered on the database without redress. Examples of concerns are things such as low birth weight, being miserable at school, or poor exam results, or even family problems such as addiction or poor living conditions. But rather than try and address these problems directly, the main thrust of the database is to collect information. And if any child has two concerns flagged up on the database, they will then need to be further investigated. The problem with this approach is that it may in fact deter people from seeking help. If children and parents know that every time they ask for help, they risk attracting unwanted attention and having their privacy invaded, it is likely that they will keep their problems to themselves until they simply cannot cope, rather than seeking advice at an earlier stage. Parents may need help with depression or stress-related drinking, or a child may need help with a drug problem or pregnancy. But what they really need is access to decent facilities and support, rather than simply being entered on a database and being labelled as a, quote, problem. The flagging up of vast number of concerns on a database will also increase the workload for caseworkers, trying to trawl through a whole load of issues that have nothing to do with child abuse, but everything to do with living under poor social conditions. Indeed, the RoyGen's Risk of Young Offending Generic Solution database is used to target potential young offenders, including things such as frequently moving house, missed medical appointment, and living in high crime areas. It also has the Orwellian catch-all category of involvement in crime or denies involvement in crime.
No doubt this database will be outsourced to some wonderful private company who will make a lot of money while making a complete mess up of the database. Remember when Capita were given the contract to run the Criminal Records Bureau, which resulted in kids being turned away at school at the start of 2002-2003 school years because they hadn't got round to checking the records of the teachers? They also got their mitts on the Connection scheme, which remixes child support services into a one-stop shop service to set you on a career ladder. Another company involving child protection is Serco, who are into prisoner tagging, monitoring and building young offenders institutions, and who also make money out of managing places like the Aldermaston Atomic Weapons Establishment and the Flyingdale Spy Base. This company has also been involved in running all of Islington's schools and was fined £300,000 for failing to reach their own performance targets.
The government and their private partners have a pretty poor record of running new computer systems like the Child Support Agency, passports and tax credits. An audit of the Met's police national computer files 4 years ago in 2000 showed that 85% of files contained errors, 4/5 of which were considered serious. And while you might be able to see what is written about you on all official databases and correct mistakes with the new children's database, parents and children won't have any access to their own files. But there are a huge number of professionals who can access the database, including local councils, police, health workers, prison services, teachers and anyone else who the Secretary of State arranges to provide, secure or participate in the provision of services. Now, with such a vast number of people accessing the database, except those affected by them, the possibility for people misusing the database is to target children is worrying. Rowan, a 17-year-old, commented, "No security system for databases of this sort is infallible, and once information is breached, it can be spread." And Action Rights for Children say, "What would social services think of a parent who published their children's names and addresses on the internet? The government are putting all our children in danger and increasing the problems of those children who are already at risk of harm." Let's face it, another massive database won't be able to offer any protection to children. Just because a family lives in a high crime area, has a family member with an addiction or mental health problem, or doesn't somehow fit into a professional's perceived correct behaviour, doesn't mean that a child is any more likely to be abused than someone from a nice, respectable nuclear family. For more information on the Children's Bill from Action Rights, check out www.arch-ed.org. I'm going to read that again. That's www.arch-ed.org.
Surfing on the rocket, surfing on the rocket.
There's a public meeting next week on the draft legislation for a national identity card. The card system will cost at least £3 billion and is likely to become an essential part of life for everyone residing in the UK. If the draft legislation is accepted by Parliament, everyone will be required to register for a card. Biometric scans of the face, fingers and eye will be taken. Personal details will be stored in a central database. A unique number will be issued that will become the basis for the matching of computer systems. The proposed card may be required to access vital public services and to receive benefits. The government proposes to enforce the programme through numerous new criminal and civil offences, including provision for unlimited financial penalty and up to 10 years imprisonment. The government is claiming that there is public support for the ID cards, and Blair has even stated there is no longer a civil liberties objection to ID cards, but we do know that the Home Office has previously misrepresented the results of one previous consultation by counting 5,000 individual responses from members of the public as just one vote. The public meeting will bring together key figures in the fields of law, politics, security, technology and human rights, and is organised by Privacy International in association with Liberty, State Watch, stand.org.uk, The Register, the 1990 Trust and the Foundation for Information Policy Research, and is hosted by the Department of Information Systems of the London School of Economics. It's next Wednesday, May 19th, from 1:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Old Theatre, London School of Economics, Houghton Street, London. It's free, and details of the meeting, as well as info on the proposed ID cards and how you can tell the government what you think, are at www.stand.org.uk.
A week and a half ago in El Salvador, 50 demonstrators wearing ski masks burst into the main cathedral to protest against the decision of their president not to withdraw their troops from Iraq. Their soldiers will have to wait until August to come back home. In response, police initially used tear gas and clubs to clear away dozens of protesters left outside the church. Many protesters were injured and the police detained three people.
Next Saturday the 15th, there will be demonstrations at Nestlé sites around the UK, with the main protest at their headquarters in Croydon. Campaign group Baby Milk Action is still finding leaflets and advertisements from Vietnam, Egypt, South Africa, which violate the code of marketing of breast milk substitutes. For more information on this, see www.babymilkaction.org.
Also this Saturday, there's the annual Kyoto March to protest against climate change. Organisers say it's a chance to make a stand against those with greater power who are most to blame, currently George W. Bush and his backers in the US fossil fuels industry, who sabotaged the world's effort to deal with global climate change by dumping the Kyoto Treaty now 3 years ago. The event marks the anniversary of that greatest of environmental crimes. As well as a 20-mile march to the US Embassy in London, from the headquarters of ExxonMobil in Leatherhead, there's a rally at the Imperial War Museum at 3:30 p.m. and a dinosaur party at the US Embassy in London from 5:30 p.m. For more info, see www.campaignagainstclimatechange.net and www.stopeso.com.
Meanwhile, on the 18th next week, protesters are planning to give George Bush Sr. the, quote, reception he deserves, as the architect of the first Gulf War comes to London to raise money for his son's re-election campaign. He's the main guest at a dinner party hosted by Republicans Abroad, with tickets for the event costing $1,000 each. The dinner party welcome is expected to be at the Landmark Hotel in central London, and details are available on the website www.stopwar.org.uk.
Back in America, Disney is blocking the release of Michael Moore's new film Fahrenheit 9/11 because it seems it might jeopardise its relationship with Jeb Bush in Florida and the tax breaks that they receive there. For the lowdown on that situation, check out www.michaelmoore.com.
And staying in America, a 15-year-old schoolboy from Seattle was recently arrested and then questioned by the Secret Service after his art teacher found him drawing cartoons showing George Bush as the devil firing missiles at all and sundry. Another picture showed, rather ironically, the Bill of Rights and the American Constitution in flames, which is fair enough if you ask us. After the boy was released, the Secret Service confiscated all the pictures, to which the boy said, "They're blowing this way out of proportion." 28th and 29th of May, 58 heads of states will meet in Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, for the third summit of Latin America, the Caribbean and the European Union, ALCUE, convened under the pretext of strengthening bioregional cooperation to eliminate poverty and address social problems. The ALCUE summit nevertheless represents the public fate of the neoliberal recolonization of Latin America by European transnational corporations. For the global justice movement, these days are an opportunity to present just and viable alternatives for the people of Latin America and the Caribbean. For Mexicans in particular, we'd like it to become a meeting place for the consolidation of our independent and autonomous networks into a coordinated force working to create a better world. It is important to note that this region plays a key role in the construction of the largest free trade area in the world, the FTAA. Mexico currently has 4 independent media centres, all of which lack resources and equipment, and in the case of Mexico City, workspace. A dozen alternative media collectives will come together in Guadalajara to form an operational IMC during the summit as a base for reporting. The goal is that a permanent IMC Guadalajara will remain there afterwards. For information and methods of donating, head over to tinyurl.com/2LZX4.
And I'll just read that again. That's tinyurl.com/2LZX4. Now to Seattle, where lawyers and activists are putting out the all-come-free call to the 155 activists arrested at 1st and Broad Street on December the 1st in the 1999 Seattle WTO protests. A class action lawsuit, Hickey versus State of Seattle, has been won on their behalf by the trial lawyers for public justice, and the City of Seattle is paying out $250,000 in damages for wrongful arrest. A second class action suit for people arrested inside the allegedly unconstitutional no-protest zone is still underway and awaiting the results of an appeal. Preemptive arrests and police harassment have become the norm at any large protest, and the legal battles surrounding these arrests have become a major front, which the pro bono defence team, such as the TLPJ and the ACLU, are holding the line on the First Amendment rights to free speech in America, but also the rights to assemble and the rights to protest. Very soon, that front will be coming to Boston in America with the upcoming protests surrounding the Democratic National Convention.
On behalf of Afro Air, we would like to welcome you aboard Flight 243. Our journey time today will be approximately 70 minutes. Please direct your attention to the in-flight sound designer, who will demonstrate the safety features of this aircraft. It is with 2 exits, one by the decks and one at the rear of the base beams. Please take a moment to locate the exit nearest you, realizing that the best thing is to sit as close to the speakers as possible. Please make sure your seatbelts are securely fastened. Our aircraft is pressurized, sound enhanced, and equipped with turbo sound for your listening pleasure. After takeoff, we will be coming through the cabin with toxic beverages and smoking materials. We ask that you relax and feel the rhythm at all times. Please make sure that your seat bags are in their upright and locked position as we prepare for takeoff. All laptop computers, mobile phones, digital sound generators must be turned off. Please enjoy your flight.
Thank you.
Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. And next up, we've got some roundup reports of resistance to corporate culture from America and Bristol.
Anti-Walmart movement heating up. Walmart has been steadily drawing mainstream media attention with a rejection of a proposed Walmart in Inglewood, California, as well as its exploitation of illegal immigrants. However, those on the front lines of the battle against corporate America have always known that Walmart has no respect for workers, the communities they locate in, and has no problem getting rich white employees getting rich while employees are cheated out of their already low wages. Also, veterans of the fair trade movement know that Walmart is the poster child for companies exploiting free trade deals. However, not everything is rosy for the world's largest company and employer. Resistance is blooming in Walmart's home region of northwest Arkansas. A coalition of labor, human rights, environmental peace, and hometown activists have forged the Against the Wall Coalition, which has steadily been planning for a convergence and march on the Walmart Shareholders Convention June the 4th and 5th. The Against the Wall Roadshow is travelling the Mid-South this month, spreading the word with teach-ins about Walmart's New World paradigm and encouraging concerned people to attend the convergence. The local organising coalition has secured Ridge Hollow Amphitheatre up at the convergence spot with an ongoing DIY skill sharing festival. Local musicians and artists will be performing all day long, and there will be free camping and food provided by good-hearted hill folk. Stay tuned to Arkansas IMC for coverage of Against the Wall mobilisation and ongoing investigation into the largest company ever, and see the website arkansas.indymedia.org and Against the Wall.org, and wall is spelt with one L.
Starbucks in Clifton and Bristol was the target for a lively picket both inside and out last week. Starbucks has been a capitalist success story, spreading like a virus and making huge profits, while campaigners say keeping struggling coffee farmers around the world in absolute poverty. They also fund and support the fake environmentalist group Conservation International. Conservation International is accused of being nothing more than greenwash front for powerful multinational corporations such as Gap, General Electric, Esso, BP, McDonald's, Walt Disney and so on. 15 people took part in a successful day of action against Starbucks, handing out leaflets and holding banners reading "Coffee for the rich, coffins for the poor" and "What is the real price?" Another one, complete with subverted Starbucks logo, said it loud and clear, "Starbucks sucks." Customers were handed leaflets as management got hot under the collar. Several people were shown the door while they started telling it like how it is. Meanwhile, outside, people got a taste of something different and a glimpse of another way. Free, organic, fair trade coffee was dished out to surprised and interested shoppers. It was offered as an alternative to the overpriced, guilt-ridden coffee sold in Starbucks. It was an instant hit. This coffee, it was explained, came from the autonomous communities of Chiapas, Mexico. "We stand with the movement against corporate power and state terrorism," said one of the campaigners as they served up the free coffee.
And staying in Bristol, it seems that the good folk of St Werburgh's have been getting motivated to remove 13 ugly advertising billboards which for many blight their community. In January, the proactive St Werburgh's Neighbourhood Association decided to tackle the problem head-on, and so began the St Werburgh's Against Billboard campaign. Recently, on a warm spring Friday evening, up to 40 people crammed into a tiny room in the community centre to hear what Councillor Dudley Seaward and the representatives from the planning department were prepared to do about the billboards. The Neighbourhood Association had done all the necessary groundwork. They'd petitioned, collecting up to 800 signatures against the billboards, and done a survey of 8 streets asking for opinions on the billboards, and finding that, surprise, surprise, 93% of the people felt the same way as they did. Companies like JC Doe and Clear Channel often erect billboard hoardings before they receive the appropriate planning permission, and often pay nothing to either the council or the landowners, with often the money going straight to the treasury. Take, for example, the 2 billboards on Glenfrome Road by the gasworks. Both there have no planning permission. The planning department tried to force the billboard companies to remove them, but the companies appealed, holding up the process, and to this day they're still there. The same is true of another two billboards on Baptist Mills' side of the underpass. Both of these have no planning permission, but they also remain, and the adverts pasted there are changed regularly. While waiting for some sign of movement from the council, it seems some residents have taken matters into their own hands, with several of the billboards having their planning permission revoked by citizen action and getting the chop. Others, which never had permission anyway, have also been completely dismantled by people taking action in their own community. Various groups have now claimed responsibility for the actions, including the Billboard Liberation Front, Crime Think Media Posse, the Owl Advertisers Brigades, and the CCC, the Clifton Communist Collective. But it's also more seriously worth noting that at least one of the billboards was owned by Clear Channel, ardent Bush supporters and media monopolists who are greedily eyeing the UK for more media acquisitions. The vice chair of the company is Tom Hicks, a member of the Bush Pioneer Club for elite and generous donors. Also in America, Clear Channel organised and promoted numerous patriotic pro-war rallies, which were held in various cities around the country. They organised, advertised, provided speakers and entertainment, and even handed out hundreds of American flags to participants at these events, before turning round and reporting, surprise, surprise, a significant upswing of pro-war patriotic fervour. Media bias? You bet.
الحسد علي شوطوك يا عمري يا عمري يا عمري
for the immediate release by Oxford University of two rhesus macaw monkeys. After 15 years of confinement and experimentation, these individuals have known no life outside the walls of a university lab. The two rhesus monkeys in question have had surgery to remove part of their brains 10 years previously, when they were 5 years old. The monkeys were last known to be involved in an experiment funded by the Medical Research Council and conducted at Oxford University, and according to research data, was exploring reaction to visual stimulus. These two individuals have been given artificially produced brain damage by scientists trying to mimic human brain damage, and then set a battery of tests to study their reaction times. Speak Campaigns will be holding a demonstration in Oxford on Saturday 15th of May to call for the release of the two monkeys. See www.speakcampaigns.org.uk.
There were six arrests on Sunday afternoon as anti-Trident protesters twice stopped a nuclear weapons convoy travelling from England to the main warhead storage depot in Scotland. The first interruption took place just beneath the Stirling Castle. One activist waved the leading truck to a standstill and then climbed on top of its cab, while others went in front to block its advance. It was 20 minutes before the trucks could set off again, and there were four arrests. When the convoy reached Balloch on Loch Lomond's side, there was a heavy police presence, but in spite of this, the convoy was again halted, with a further two people being arrested. The convoys are a regular feature on the roads of central Scotland. The protesters were from Trident Ploughshares, Stirling C&D and Faslane Peace Camp. David, a Stirling C&D member, said, "We are delighted that the convoy was held up in Stirling. We were able to explain to large numbers of passing motorists that they were close to Britain's very own weapons of mass destruction."
We're almost running out of time now. Just enough time to quickly say one of the stories we didn't get time for, but which we can run next week, was about the G8 summit due to be held next month in America, on Sea Island, no less, in Georgia. That'll be happening on June the 8th through to the 10th. And we've got a whole report here on some of the local community action that activists on the ground are involved with already, working with local communities to prepare a reception in advance of the big bad G8. Next up, we'll have an outro and we're going to introduce that. But before that, we just have time to say goodbye and we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye. This week's outro is a mix of music with media reports and speeches about the recent Iraqi prisoner abuse scandal. It was produced by Skidmark Bob of Pop Defect Radio, which airs on Free Radio Santa Cruz in the US, which you can find at freakradio.org.
And it's not a.
But here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants. Well, he gets.
It's also important for the people of Iraq to know that in a democracy, everything is not perfect. Everything is not perfect.
And it made us sick to our stomachs.
Graphic photographs showing the torture and sexual abuse of Iraqi prisoners in a U.S.-run prison outside Baghdad emerged yesterday from a military inquiry which has left six soldiers facing a possible court-martial and a general under investigation.
Do I have a responsibility in this? Without question. But there's a lot of other people that have at least an equal responsibility or more.
U.S. military investigators discovered the photographs, which include images of a hooded prisoner with wires fixed to his body and nude inmates piled in a human pyramid. The pictures, which were obtained by an American TV network, also show a dog attacking a prisoner and other inmates being forced to simulate sex with each other. A military report into the Abu Ghraib case makes it clear that private contractors were supervising interrogations in the prison, which was notorious for torture and executions under Saddam Hussein. One civilian contractor is a young male prisoner, but has not been charged because military law has no jurisdiction over him. This is the first time the privatization of interrogation and intelligence gathering has come to light. The investigation names two U.S. contractors, CACI International Incorporated and the Titan Corporation, for their involvement in Abu Ghraib.
I was sorry for the humiliation suffered by the Iraqi prisoners.
and the humiliation suffered by their families.
Across the Arab world, news of the abuse and humiliation of the Iraqi prisoners was met with disgust. In Cairo, why are we letting them do this? This man shouts. Who is responsible?
You said you're going in for democracy. It's anything but democracy. There's truly no excuse for them to be in Iraq right now.
These pictures will build up hate, will build up revenge.
And in Amman,
it is considered by the Jordanian public opinion as more or less as a war crime.
I've said today that there are a lot more photographs and videos that exist beyond notice. That's just a fact. And if they're sent to some news organization taken out of the criminal prosecution channels that they're in, that's where we'll be. And it's not a pretty picture.
The number of disturbing photos coming out of Abu Ghraib continues to multiply. The latest picture, obtained by the New Yorker magazine, shows an inmate wrapped in cellophane and packed in ice. Another photograph showed an empty room at the Abu Ghraib prison, splattered with blood. On the streets of Baghdad, people are increasingly saying the U.S. occupation is the same as Saddam Hussein's brutal regime. There is no God but God, and America is the enemy of God, hundreds of families chant at the gates of Abu Ghraib.
More and more photographs of the torture victims in Iraq are surfacing all across the globe and in the U.S. mainstream media as the slaughter in Iraq continues at the hands of the U.S. occupiers. A car bomb detonated in Najaf today at the U.S. headquarters, killing 5 Iraqi civilians and 1 U.S. soldier. Another exploded in Baghdad, killing 2 U.S. soldiers late Wednesday night.
Series of simultaneous bombings in Baghdad.
It's the deadliest attack on U.S. troops in Iraq since the beginning of the war.
In our listening post series, the reports of prisoner abuse have only added more fuel to that Arab fire.
What happened was there's a 57-year-old Iraqi man named Sadiq Zoman who was detained by U.S. forces during a home raid. He was helped by them, transferred to Crete, and there, apparently, is where he was beaten, bludgeoned in the head. He was electrocuted. He had electric burns on his hands. And there are photos of this as well. He was whipped across the back and tortured so heavily that he slipped into a coma. So this happened while he was in detention. Then he was transferred to a U.S. Army field hospital where he was held for 12 days until they checked on him. It was obvious he was not going to recover, not coma, and was then dispatched to a hospital in Crete with papers basically saying, well, he had a heart attack and a heat stroke, even though he had the back of his head bludgeoned in, electrical burn marks in his hands, on his penis, whip marks across his back. One of his hands was broken. Both of his thumbs were broken and bruises all up and down his body. So he was then transferred down to Baghdad eventually once his family found him. And now he is in a coma in his home in the Al-Dour region of Baghdad. His wife and 9 daughters are trying to care for him, trying to deal with the expensive medicines he needs every month to stay alive. They've sold literally everything in their home to try to keep feeding him and buying the supplies and the medicines that he needs. The paperwork that they dropped him off with, I have a copy of the full medical report by the military doctor at that field hospital, and it basically said he had myocardial infarction, i.e. a heart attack, heat stroke, and then listed the fact that they had to put a tracheotomy in him and a gastrectomy. But basically the 2 top reasons they gave were a heart attack and heat stroke. It was at the 28th Combat Support Hospital, and the doctor's name is Michael C. Hodges. He's a lieutenant colonel in the medical corps. There.
Michael C. Hodges, a lieutenant colonel in the medical corps.
And it's not a pretty picture.
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Pays the cost for the liberties you demand.
I told him I was equally sorry that that people have been seeing those pictures, didn't understand the true nature and heart of America. I assured him that Americans like me didn't appreciate what we saw. And it made us sick to our stomachs.
In a democracy, everything is not perfect.
You've been listening to Indie Media Radio on Resonance 104.4.